this piece of filet mignon?
The Rich Eisen Show. Show. Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
I've identified these five teams. One of them is Miami. Would Denver do this? Do the Bears go for it? What about the Los Angeles Rams? What about Dallas? You want to get Jonathan Taylor?
The Rich Eisen Show. Earlier on the show, NFL Network insider Tom Pelissero. Still to come, Oregon State head coach Jonathan Smith. Packers beat writer for The Athletic, Matt Schneidman. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Our number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air here on this busy Thursday, 2 weeks before kickoff of the NFL season. We spent the first hour talking to Tom Pelissero about the 49ers' decision to go with Sam Darnold as their backup over Trey Lance, the third overall selection in the draft just a couple of years ago. We also talked about the Jonathan Taylor latest with him. We also poured one out for Otani's throwing arm moving forward. Who knows what's happening there? Jeff Passan of ESPN, kind enough to be a late ad. He's slated to join us in about 20 minutes time for the latest on all of that. Hour number two here, Susie Schuster sitting in for Chris Brockman over there. Hello, Suze.
Hi there, honey.
DJ Mikey D is in these nuts. Hello there, honey. How are you?
Very well.
Good. TJ Jefferson, how are you? Good to see you, sir. How are you?
I'm happy to be here.
Good. Hour number two right here on the Roku channel, 844-204-RICH. Number to dial. We'll have time to take your phone calls later on. He is the reigning Pac-12 Coach of the Year in 2022. Oregon State football quarterback from back in the day. Pride of Corvallis then, as he is right now, the head coach of the football program there, Jonathan Smith. Kind enough to call in the Rich Eisen Show. How are you, Coach?
Yeah, I'm doing great, Rich. Thanks for having us.
You bet. I just definitely wanted to kick the tires on what's going on there right now, what's going through your mind and the program. But first, I do want to hit the Wayback Machine a little bit with you. And, you know, how did a kid from Pasadena wind up in Corvallis back in the day for you?
Yeah, that is quite a while ago. But it's a little bit. I was down there. I had a high school teammate getting recruited by Oregon State, and through that evaluation, they kind of put eyes on me, invited me to walk on at the time. And I knew I wanted to get into coaching, and I felt like that was the highest level I could get to really learn about it. And so, got up here with a guy named Mike Riley, was the head coach.
I've heard of him.
And he, promised that I'd get an opportunity to compete, and a couple years later, ended up playing and having a great time.
Now, no question about it. What did you glean from Coach Riley and Erickson? You want to talk about guys that who you could learn stuff from? You certainly did that.
Yeah, I did a ton. I mean, both of them definitely, personalities are different. Ways of doing things are different. But schematically, offense, both of them really, really sharp, learned a ton. And they had some really good coaches around them. My first quarterback coach was Paul Christ, who had a nice run there at Wisconsin, and learned a ton from him. And that was really what I was looking for. So all of those guys impacted my coaching career a ton.
I'm sure. When it's all said and done, do you sometimes catch yourself and it's like, oh, gosh, I sound like, Coach Riley. I sound like Coach Erickson. Anything like that? Do you catch yourself?
On occasion, those guys. I worked for Chris Peterson for a long time. He had a huge influence, and so I sound like him. You're always trying to own your own voice, but those guys, again, impacted, and I learned a ton. So when I sound like him, I take it with pride.
And I understand as well that, you know, the coaching mantra that you can only control what you can control, control the controllables, however you want to say it, is definitely a default position. But I am wondering how the latest news to come out of the Pac-12 has hit you and your football program, Coach.
Yeah, there's no question that mantra, controlling what we can control. It's not easy to do, but ultimately it is our only option right now. And that's what actually it's been nice. The last 3 weeks going through training camp, preparing for a season, day to day with our players, focused on the task at hand. That's been almost an escape from all of this. And it is. It's ultimately out of our control. We feel good about this team, the roster we have, and the season that's certain in front of us. And then through this uncertainty, you know, once it finally plays itself out and there's some certainty of what it looks like for Oregon State moving forward, then we can, you know, process that and make a plan moving forward.
Well, have you addressed this? Did you call the team together en masse? What have you done with the team on this subject matter?
Well, we addressed it early on in camp, and same thing, controlling what we can control, what we feel really good about, you know, this current roster, this staff, the chance we have this season, and that's our complete focus. So we set the stage early in camp. I think we addressed it one other time about a week ago. And now, you know, potentially breaking news today. Just we anticipated news going to break. But again, it goes back to this mantra of controlling what we can and focused on the task at hand.
And so how do you think the kids have handled it?
I think they've been, it's felt great in regards to the practices are normal, focus, meetings, work ethic. And I kind of say it this way, in this day and age of college football with the transfer portal, I think everyone's reevaluating come December, January, their situation, each individual player. Crap, I mean, coaches are doing it, and now schools are doing it. And so I don't see it that different to come December. You know, everyone's going to reevaluate and sort it all out. We just want to stay focused on these next 4 months.
And so, you know, does it piss you off? I'll just come out and ask you point blank.
Oh, there's moments. There's no question. I get some bitterness. You mentioned it. I grew up in Pasadena. I grew up going to the Rose Bowl and Pac-12 versus Big Ten games. This will be my 17th season in the Pac-12 as a player or a coach. Yeah, I got some deep roots here and really pride of West Coast football and knowing all the schools and all that. So, yeah, I got some bitterness the way this has all played out. Ultimately, I see it's a business side, and currently we're playing musical chairs and we don't got a chair to sit on.
Well, I'm just wondering as well, do you use this as a rallying cry for the season?
I don't know if I get hammered a ton with our guys. These guys are motivated. They want to win. They want to play well. And just because it's out of our control how this is playing out. Well, the players we're playing against, it's out of their control too. It's not like they made these calls or something. So I don't use it a ton on the motivation side. I think there'll be guys in our locker room that, yeah, it might be a huge motivation for them. But as a program, we've built this thing to where we got a chance to compete at a really high level, and we're focused on doing that.
Yeah, you do, Jonathan Smith. There's no question that you do. And the reason why I'm not saying, like, hey, let's do this, you know, for the Pac-12. I'm saying, you know, hey, heart of hearts, where's Oregon State going to wind up? And, you know, you're hearing about Stanford and Cal maybe winding somewhere with the ACC, or maybe the Big Ten goes and gets them, and you and Washington State might be left without a chair. And if you go and kick ass in the Pac-12 season, the final one, then maybe you can open some eyes and get a home that you might not otherwise have, Coach. Is that a fair assessment?
I mean, you'd like to think if we can play really well, and that's back to what we can control. And so that's what we're focused on. We're preparing. We got a non-conference schedule first, and we're locked in on that. And then again, it's out of our control how this thing plays out. But we're playing this season for this current 23, Beaver locker room and coaching staff. And then we'll let the dust settle after that.
I've got Jonathan Smith, Oregon State head football coach, here on the Rich Eisen Show. Speaking of transfer portal, you've named a new starting quarterback, have you not, Coach?
Yeah, yep, DJ U. As he goes around a lot of did a great job.
Come on now. Hold on a second. You once threw to TJ Houshmandzadeh, which is definitely not a monosyllabic name. Come on now. Right? So
yeah.
What do you got? DJ U, right?
DJ Ungulaleli.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
It ain't easy, man. It ain't easy, but I'm sorry. He's an incredibly talented kid that you have there.
Got here in January, dove into just being a part of the locker room, not trying to be the face of the program right away. I think he's gained a ton of respect from the players on the team. He worked really hard. This offensive system is quite a bit different than what he'd been doing before, and so there was a learning curve all the way through spring ball, and then got into fall camp, and you could see his comfort level getting better and better, and he played well. We had a couple of scrimmages that he played at a high level. I think he's won over this team that way. I do think this was pretty competitive. We got a quarterback room with some talent. Ben Goldbrunson, who he beat out last year, went 7-1 as a starter last year for us and pushed DJ in a big way, and we got a freshman, Aiden Giles, that has a lot of talent, and he's played well. And so we've got some options in the room, but DJ's going to go out there first.
So what has the university told you, Coach, about what's being talked about, the future of the program, and what conference you might wind up in. What are you hearing?
Our athletic director, Scott Barnes, I think he's done a great job communicating when there's information. At the same time, when there's uncertainty, he's not taking me in deep into the weeds so I can focus on the task at hand. Obviously exploring different options and what options those are. And so that I just leave it in their hands on Peyton's future. And I appreciate the communication, but until we have some definite clarity, once we have clarity, I'll be feel good about making a plan moving forward.
Okay. Do you, at any point in time, when you have a moment alone, maybe driving to work or something, think about how wild it is that you are in a position where you are, and obviously you've been the coach there a while, but at this juncture, to be in this position for such a crucial season for your school after what you did for this school, is there any sense of significance that you have entering this season that stands out to you?
Well, it's significant, yes, with all the movement going on, but it's significant. We're opening up a brand new stadium that we just finished, over $170 million expansion. Mm-hmm. The thing is beautiful. It's going to be rocking. We got an awesome home schedule with a lot of perennials coming in here: Utah, UCLA, UW. And so that's significant that way. I don't want our players feeling like this thing is bigger than what it is. We're going to line up and play each week and go, but we're definitely excited about the opportunity that this, historical season, if it is the last season of the Pac-12 conference, makes me want to puke to even say that, but if it is, we want to play our best and enjoy it.
Then point out to everybody you took the wrong school, right? Every week you go out there, you could do that with your play, right?
We've got opportunity to play into that narrative, but I'll just say it again, it's about us and what we're going to do. And there's a lot of people that I think want us to do well, and hopefully we turn into a great national story, but I don't want to add any pressure to this locker room in regards to living up to different expectations. We got our own expectations, and we're locked in on those.
All right, before I let you go, and I appreciate the time, please provide me with your favorite Chad Johnson story. Please, give me your favorite one.
I'll tell you the first time I met him. He comes from Santa Monica Junior College. He had to pass a class or two, so he arrives like a day or two before we start practicing in August. Mm-hmm. And he comes up to me and, someone introduced him because I was the quarterback. And he introduces himself and he tells me he's going to buy me a Lexus. And I kind of think, what? He's like, yeah, I'm going to buy you a Lexus because you're going to get me to the National Football League. And I'm still waiting on that Lexus.
He told me he was giving me Debo shoes at 15 Pro Bowls ago, and I'm still waiting on them.
Yep.
So
yep.
He's on brand. So that's what he told you for the when he first met you?
Oh, yeah. He's a beautiful man. He great personality, and obviously he was a really good player, had an awesome NFL career, and did a ton for the one season here. But that's the first time I met him.
What did he tell you in a huddle? TJ's probably in your ear too, right?
TJ was huge for him. TJ, because TJ would have been there a year longer. Chad was still learning the formations and the plays and all that. So TJ was his right-hand man, helping him get lined up.
Did Carson Palmer ever call you up and say, how do I deal with these guys? Did that ever happen?
He didn't, man. He probably functioned with them fine and all that. He did not call me for any advice.
I'm just wondering if that had happened. And do you refer to him as Ocho or no? He's always Chad Johnson.
No, he's Chad. He's Chad to me.
Okay. So. Coach, thanks for the time. Greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah,
best of luck.
Guys.
You bet. That's Jonathan Smith, head coach of the Oregon State Beavers, right here on the Rich Eisen Show. I mean, they got a new stadium there. So you did or did not go to Corvallis back in the day? You did.
I did. I was just thinking, if you knew Ron Artest before, you wouldn't call him Meta. Like, I don't think he would ever call Chad Johnson Ocho, because you can't take that seriously. First of all, you can't take Ocho seriously regardless, because you can't call somebody Ocho.
Well, certainly if he's going to say, I'm going to buy you a Lexus because you're going to get me to the NFL, he did, and there's no Lexus.
Chad said a lot of things.
Chad said, told me he was going to get me Debo's.
The Sears.
Yeah.
Well, Shaq also told you that he was going to wear chaps on your show.
That's
so
true.
There's that,
and a
too.
Dallas Cowboys.
People say a lot of things in the heat of the moment.
I know. Ernie Johnson once told me that's apparently a stock line for him. said he's going to show up as a cheerleader as a paying off a bet that he has no intention of ever doing.
That's crap. You should call him out on it.
We did.
Look, Shaq buys strangers cars and laptops. Oh, I think we could let him slide by on that.
Yeah, but there's a difference between basically buying a stranger a car and showing up in chaps. I feel like it's a lot easier for Shaq to buy
somebody a car. Is that what you
want
to see, Shaq and chaps?
Definitely don't.
No, I don't.
No,
no, no, certainly do not.
No.
Just real quick here, let's just linger on this for a second. So you're Oregon State, and you're hearing everybody's gone. And you're looking around going, what happened to this conference? And you're hearing, because we were, I mean, I have referred to it as the Pac-4 all the time. Because it's Oregon State, Washington State, Stanford, and Cal. That's left. That's it. And you're hearing Big Ten might take Stanford and Cal. ACC wants Stanford and Cal. You're not hearing who's going to take Oregon State or Washington State. You're not hearing that right now. And so if you're Oregon State and Jonathan Smith and Utah strolls into your stadium on a Friday night on FS1, Mike, you're going to do that game? Is that on your list?
No,
because it's FS1. You don't bother with them. That's right.
Stop.
And then you got UCLA coming to your house on October 14th. You're visiting Prime.
Oof.
On November 4th. You're visiting Arizona on the 26th. You've got Stanford right there coming, but you've got Washington coming to your house, and then you're going to Oregon. You don't think it's just like, let's show them they took the wrong damn team.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yes.
And that's going to be the conversation, by the way, prior to the Saturday, September 23rd visit to Washington State, the two teams that might be left without chairs. I mean, that's going to be a conversation all year long. And they got this kid from Clemson, Ungalale.
DJ.
DJ Ungalale, I believe is how you pronounce
his
name.
You know what's funny, Rich? I put a note in notes in my phone 3 years ago after a Clemson game on how to pronounce
what
his
do you
name.
Got?
So I still have it from 2020. DJ Uwe Ungalale.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is a seriously impressive pull there.
He is
way more professional
than Brockman. We all know that.
Well, it just because I didn't notice he transferred until like 2 weeks ago. I was like, oh, he's with Oregon State.
Oregon State.
Then when you brought it up, I was like, wait a minute, I know I have it. So yeah, I had it in my phone one day because I was like, one day I'm going to need to know how to say this guy's name.
I'm sure he doesn't want the season to be about that. And as he said, doesn't want any more added pressure. But UCLA's coming in. It's just like, okay, enjoy the Big Ten, which they will. Washington. Oh, okay. You're the ones who are just leaving us.
Yeah, you want to stick
Oregon.
It to them.
They finish up with Washington, Oregon, the two teams that just left for the Big Ten that puts them in the most tenuous position possible moving forward. They went 10-3 last year. What if they... Man, I'm rooting for them.
Looking into the crystal ball that we do have, it isn't at your desk, but we do have it. Do you have any predictions about those two teams? Just
which
off
ones?
The top of the, Oregon State
and Washington State? Zero idea. No idea. No idea. But they got to find a home.
You don't think they stay independent?
Independent.
Yeah, it's insane.
That's only Notre Dame that can do that, right?
This whole conversation is insane. What they have done to college football is insane. Period.
It's professional.
It's ridiculous.
It's pro football.
Yeah. And we get a playoff.
That's all that matters.
Yeah,
you hear that?
That's the fan
right there. We got a playoff.
Got a playoff.
And soon you're going to end up having, what, 80 teams? March Madness is 68 now,
68,
right?
68, yeah.
But then why didn't they do this in an organized fashion? And just one fell swoop.
It's college athletics.
Because
Suze.
this is
you spend enough
insanity.
Time in it.
Yeah, I know. I get it. But, I mean, this is just going to spend the next 5 years disintegrating college football.
The NIL came into being July 1st, 2021. And we're on the air. We were talking about it. Like, what's the future going to be? And everyone's just like, I don't know. To this day, still no mass plan to deal with it. We'll take a break. Jeff Passan's going to join us. 844-204-RICH. Number to dial. We're late for him, but it's okay. It's a couple more minutes of sleep for him. He stayed up all night writing about Ohtani for ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
how would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger. Feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Are you currently enjoying the show on the Stitcher app? Then you need to know Stitcher is going away on August 29th. Yep. Going away, as in kaput, gone, dead. Rest in peace, Stitcher, and thanks for 15 years of service to the podcast community. So switch to another podcast app and follow this show there. Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
I don't know if they still have a shot to make the playoffs or not. Do they? Do they still have a shot?
Well, yeah. I mean, all they have to do is just try and win one of the next two without Tony. And then he comes back, and no one's running away with this league. No one's running away with this division right now.
You know what? I guarantee we'll win one of the next two without Tony.
Okay.
And I'm guaranteeing we'll make the playoffs.
Okay. I will write that. Write that down right now, Shaquille O'Neal.
If we don't make the playoffs, I'll come with a Dallas Cowgirl suit on your show with some pom-poms for 10 seconds.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
I will come. I'll walk out for 10 seconds. Let everybody take pictures, make fun, then I got to leave. 10 seconds, that's all you get. Not 11 seconds, not 12, you get 10 seconds.
Okay.
I have on a skirt,
this is amazing.
Pom-pom, and a blonde ponytail wig.
If again, the Dallas Cowboys, they don't make the playoffs at all in this season. Okay.
Now, what are you going to do if they make the playoffs?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So,
Same bet.
But I think they're making the playoffs.
All right, deal.
I'll do it with you, Shaq. How about that?
Deal.
How are you, Shaq?
First of all, it's not my fault. You need to blame it on the Dallas shops. I've been downtown Dallas looking for some big booty cheerleader shorts. They don't have any.
So.
But yes, I'm a man of my word, and yes, I will come there one day when you least expect it.
Ooh.
And fulfill my bet.
Well, but the thing is, I have to do it with you, Shaq, so I do need probably a little bit of a heads up, you know?
No, but you know what? I don't want you to do it with me because, you know what? You waited long enough.
Okay.
You know, you're at the point to where you don't think I'm going to believe it. So just to prove it to you, I want you to be front and center.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you 12 seconds.
This is the best possible scenario, Shaq, is you've extended it 2 seconds and absolved me from having to do it.
Look, exactly. I just want you to sit there and watch.
Ah, yes. All of Shaq's appearances throughout this show and our YouTube page right here on The Rich Eisen Show. Back here on our radio network, The Rich Eisen Show desk I'm sitting at is furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger is the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Kind enough to call in Sleep Deprived because he is a lead pipe wielding professional who makes sure he's on top of a major story like Shohei Ohtani blowing out his pitching elbow. He is none other than Jeff Passan from the Worldwide Leader in Sports back here on the program. How are you, Jeff?
I'm well, Rich. How are you?
I'm doing... Are you caffeinated? Are you highly caffeinated right now?
No, I'm not caffeinated. What I'm doing is what I like to refer to as overcompensation. When I don't sleep, I try and come in at the beginning like super energized.
Yes.
Just to like set a tone so that when I inevitably fade later in the conversation, you don't judge me too harshly for it.
I appreciate the roadmap. Thank you. You're a good man. That's a great roadmap, Jeff. Let's just jump right into it then while you have your energy. I'm gutted. What the hell, man? We can't have nice things. Huh? Unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, elbows really suck. Like, that's sort of the moral of the story here. I spent 4+ years of my life writing a book about them. And I just saw like sadness after sadness after sadness. And it scares me now because my child, you know, is 15 years old and throws hard. And I'm worried that I'm going to be like the moron father who wrote the book on something and still couldn't keep his kid from, you know, suffering that injury. And there's a very harsh reality, Rich, when it comes to baseball players. And it's this, the harder you throw, the likelier you are to get hurt. And the way that baseball players are taught these days is that velocity matters. And they're taught that velocity matters because guess what? It does. The harder you throw, the more effective you are. That's just what the numbers tell us. They do not lie about that. And while we can all sit here and romanticize Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine and you know, the elite nibblers of any particular era, they're not the norm. And they certainly, I don't think, would play as well in this velocity-rich environment these days that exists. Maybe Maddux just because he could move the ball, but Glavine, I don't think, would be quite the same. And it's the reason that you've seen the average fastball velocity jump up above 94 miles an hour. It's a staggering number considering where we were a quarter century ago, that, you know, we've gone from a good fastball, like a very good fastball being 94, 95, to that just being like the barrier of entry for any pitcher now. And Shohei Ohtani at 6'4", 230 pounds, with the ability to generate force the way he does, throws the ball about as hard as anyone.
And the vagaries of that body part or body joint and its associated ligaments just shows that Ohtani is human now that it's twice now. So what can you tell us about what the Angels did learn and the immediate aftermath moving forward?
I don't know the details of that yet. So there's going to be some, I'm not even going to call it speculation, but I will say this. I think if it were a small tear or a partial tear that could have been done through rehabilitation, that Perry Manassian, the general manager, probably would not have come out and said as clearly and concisely as he did that there's a tear in the UCL. Generally speaking, that when a general manager comes out and is that clear with the injury and isn't talking about forearm tightness or talking about the flexor mass or, you know, talking about any of those things in very specific language like that, that means Tommy John surgery is probably coming. Mm. Now, I hope I'm wrong about this, but let's remember the last time Ohtani had it. I don't know if you recall this, but during the winter meetings, like right around when he signed, I got tipped off that his elbow was not clean. And I wrote something about it, and the Angels came out and said, yeah, he's fine. And then 6 months later, it blew out finally. So he tried at that point to use platelet-rich plasma, which is a biologic that you can inject into the elbow in hopes that these healing cells are going to essentially repair a small tear. But when it's a full thickness tear or when it's close to a full thickness tear, there's nothing you can do except go into the elbow and, you know, tie off a new ligament there and hope this one keeps better than the last one did.
Jeff Passan from ESPN and the author of The Arm, Inside the Billion-Dollar Mystery of the Most Valuable Commodity in Sports, right here on the Rich Eisen Show. So, you can hit with this? You can?
Yeah, you know, when you are, Ohtani's perfect to hit with this because he's a throw right, bat left. And so, the right arm for a left-handed hitter, it tends to use more of the lateral side than the medial side. And the medial side is where the ulnar collateral ligament is. So even when you're coming back, you can hit. Now, I don't want to be too presumptive here saying that Ohtani post-surgery, if in fact that is the route this thing goes, is going to keep hitting, because I just don't know what he and his new team and or the Angels are going to be comfortable with, right? Like, it's one thing to hit the first time you're coming back, but when you have a second reconstruction of the ulnar collateral ligament, the return time takes longer. The rehabilitation takes longer. Everything about it is problematic and troublesome. And, you know, there are opportunities for things to go really awry. So I don't know for certain if Otani is going to keep hitting throughout it. Maybe it takes a little more time or gets through the pitching rehab process more than he did the first time, because the first time he was, you know, had the surgery in November, was back hitting in May. So, and we saw that exact same, or I think he had a surgery in October and was back in May. The November to May timetable was Bryce Harper this year. So it's clear, I think, that Otani will not lose a whole lot of time batting, but this is also, as is everything with him, this is something we're dealing with for the first time. And so it'll be really interesting to see what the medical professional's perspective is on this.
Jeff Passan of ESPN here on the Rich Eisen Show. I know it's too soon, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How does this impact his free agency, do you think? What's going to happen here?
I think I'm in the minority here. I think I'm in the minority, and I don't think it's going to impact it a whole lot. Now, I understand that, look, he was on track to get 600, 650, 700 million. I still think he's going to get 500.
So you think 500, because that would mean he's going to be paid as both hitter and pitcher?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I think, you know, we can look at this in a number of different ways. Ken Rosenthal, I thought, in a column he wrote, brought up a really good point that Juan Soto is just a hitter, and he turned down $440 million. Now, granted, that was for a longer period of time, and he was younger, but that was still $440 million that was on the table. Aaron Judge, who was older, who also, like, doesn't pitch, got $360 million from the Yankees this offseason. Shohei Ohtani's the biggest star in baseball. It's not even close. Like, if you want to take the star power of practically everybody else, it is not as luminescent as Ohtani by himself. So I think the ability to market him and to supercharge the valuation of your franchise just by having him around is, I'm no expert, but I would put, you know, a pretty hefty price tag on that. And then, Rich, let's just say hypothetically that Ohtani comes back as a start. Great. Huge value there. Let's say he comes back as a reliever. Are you telling me that for a 10-year contract, 10-year deal, you're not going to give him 50, 100 to be a closer when Edwin Diaz is getting 100 to be a closer for 5 years? I just, when you have all these teams that are going to be fighting for him and all these other factors there, I really do think that it's going to make its way back to 500.
Closer, huh? I mean, you're talking about, again, you wrote the book on the elbow, so it would just be, he'd be handled in a way, or just, you figure it's less stress than starting, right? I mean,
yeah, of course. I mean, that's exactly what it is. And I am not going to sit here and suggest that Shohei Ohtani should be a closer, because only he knows what his body is capable of. But I think if I'm a team looking at, okay, what do I do here? How do we keep this guy whose bat warrants us signing him until he's 40 years old? How do we keep the value there with him? I don't think relief pitching is out of the question at all, especially for a guy who's now potentially going to have had two Tommy Johns.
What a bummer, man. I wanted him to hit free agency coming off of a Cy Young and an MVP, or at least close to a Cy Young. He's definitely MVP.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, still probably going to win MVP.
Right. So, no, there's no question. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's for another day, who would be even in the running. But for me, you know, free agency hits, he's going to have the surgery, right? Then somebody's going to have to sit there and get all the medical reports and sit him down and ask him, what does he want? Obviously, his agent is going to basically say he wants to do both, because you're going to want the most money when you're hitting free agency. And then we'll have to find out who's got the stomach for it. I guess the only comparison is Kevin Durant hit free agency with a blown out Achilles, but the Nets gave him $194 million for that, but yeah. Achilles is not, pitch an elbow where.
I don't know, dude. Achilles for an explosive athlete kind of is like pitching elbow.
Okay. So you could go to the Yankees and Red Sox and say Durant, you know, got his money. We should get ours. That's what I'm saying. And I know this is very soon, but this is the conversation that's going to happen, and it's going to take over everything.
This is the conversation that's happening in front offices right now. Part of me wonders if there are going to be teams that get involved in the Ohtani sweepstakes that wouldn't have before this, because they feel like they're going to be able to potentially get a good deal. Sometimes agents start off with lower price points because they want to create bidding wars, and that once you bid for the first time, you feel so invested in it that maybe you go beyond what you would have otherwise. I just think there's a confluence of things yes, Ohtani is going to lose money compared to where he was going to be before the injury, but I still think he's going to end up with the biggest contract a baseball player has ever got.
Oh, sure. And it'll be generationally brilliant. And so I guess, you know, to wrap this up, Jeff Passan of ESPN here on the Rich Eisen Show, is now we're here in the guessing game of what's Ohtani thinking. Before it was, does he want big market, small market? You know, what type of market does he want? Now, you know, he knows what it takes to come back from Tommy John surgery, which, again, we're all assuming he's going to have. Do you think, like, if we can get in his brain right now, would he want to pitch again, right? Is he going to be so competitive, like, I'm going to show you? I'm just wondering if he'd be like, you know what, I'm such an incredible hitter, I can make an incredible amount of money and play for a much longer time if I just do one thing. And that was always the conversation when he first started, is that enjoy it while you're seeing it, folks, because it's not going to last a whole long time. I'm wondering how this might affect things for him moving forward on this front.
I just look at it this way. Shohei Ohtani could have quit pitching or hitting and focused on one of them a long, long time ago. His identity is as a two-way player. That is who he is. That is who he wants to be. That was the imperative thing for him coming over, finding an organization that was not going to prioritize one or the other and was not going to push him in that sort of direction. So in order to give that up, I don't see that happening unless his arm is telling him you can't do this anymore. And, one thing you got to know about Shohei Ohtani is he doesn't take very kindly to people telling him what he can and cannot do.
And that includes the baseball gods, I'd imagine, right?
I think that's a very fair point. He goes so all out in his training that part of me far be it from me to criticize someone who can actually pull this off, but it reminds me in a lot of ways, actually, of Bryce Harper in his mid-20s when he kept getting hurt because he was playing recklessly. And I think Shohei Ohtani, as he approaches 30 years old, if he wants to play both ways, is going to have that recognition that the body is changing. And this is a body that has taken him to amazing heights, but also at inopportune times has turned on him because he was simply asking too much of it. And if that means training a little bit differently, I think that that's going to be something that this potential surgery will teach him, and that he is an extremely learned, interested, intelligent person. And the only thing that's going to stop him from coming back is the instincts that he has that tell him he has to do everything at the peak at all times, when, as old men like us, Mr. Eisen, learn, sometimes a little bit slower is a little bit better, because you don't wind up sitting in bed that night popping Advil.
You know what? I appreciate you including yourself in that, even though I know I'm much older than you.
I'm the one with the broken back.
I know. Right, you feeling all right?
So
are you good?
Sucker among us.
You good? You good? You're right? You're feeling all right? Best you can?
Okay.
I mean,
we're not talking about a finely tuned athlete here to begin with. So the baseline's a little different.
I got one last one for you, and I apologize if I'm putting you in a position by asking it this way, but you can handle all sorts of figurative curveballs. And you'd also know the answer to this question. Does Hal Steinbrenner have a pulse? Does he have a pulse? Does it exist? Is he breathing?
Yes.
Is he alive?
Yes. In fact, I think Hal Steinbrenner's pulse is healthy compared to his father's.
Yes. Well, that's what I'm wondering. I don't know where, the Yankees need a seance, is what I tweeted out the other day. And also, when I saw a report that Hal had a discussion with his general manager and manager about what's happening, they talked about it. And I'm like, George said you're fired, and Hal's like, we're mired. That's what he's saying. So that's what I'm wondering. What's going on there? What do we have?
Why do we romanticize George Steinbrenner being like? I understand George
brutal.
Steinbrenner won championships. That's why we romanticize it.
Yes.
But George Steinbrenner would be like the king of the toxic workplace environment.
Yes.
Lawsuit from people who are working that. If you drop George Steinbrenner in 2023,
yes,
he would be gone within 2 weeks.
I know we romanticize, but he wouldn't countenance this in a way that it appears his son does.
I got accused. I went on with our buddy Michael Kay a couple days ago, and got accused of like being a shill for the Yankees. I'm just trying to like be as pragmatic as possible in my assessment here. The Yankees, like over the last 5 years, have won like 103, 102, 92, and 99 games. I understand they're having a bad year this year, and I understand it's going in the wrong direction. But to suggest that the Yankees haven't been effective, I'm sorry, I just don't buy it. And yes, we are up against a phone call from Bristol here. So,
all right,
Mr. Eisen,
take care, Jeff. You be well,
and I'll talk to you later.
Take care, bud. You be well. That's Jeff Passan, everybody.
You just got big league there.
No, I didn't. That's the people who's.
I mean,
it's
no. But he also said he's got to take a breather and then get the energy back up.
Yeah, he's the best. I love Jeff. Jeff's the best. So Jeff's the best.
He's a good interview.
He's great. I just love the way he talks and the way he, but he knows his stuff. He's funny and he's interesting.
He'll call us from anywhere.
He's an ice machine.
He's so, oh yeah. That was at the All-Star game in Seattle. Right? Hoskins? Is that somewhere deep in the recesses back there?
But do you get the impression he thinks that he's going to get surgery repaired, some PRP, and then be out there throwing and hitting? I mean, I'm so concerned about the reconstruction for the second time, and he just seems like he's going to get money.
But
to be a closer, that's so depressing.
Well, I mean, hold on a second.
Depressing.
Wait a minute.
No, he comes in and like mows down the three guys in the night throwing 100. Like,
I guess so.
By the way, you and I with our children.
Right.
Watched Ohtani close the World Baseball Classic.
That was fun.
Yeah. How great was that?
Sounded
that
good.
Was fun.
Okay, and you, not me.
And that wasn't he against Trout?
You have
yes.
Yeah. You have seen the insanity
great
of the rally
closers.
Monkey, right?
Jump around.
And Percival.
But that would mean that he's there in Anaheim, and I can't get anywhere. The impression.
Well, just anywhere is what I'm saying. What I'm saying, just anywhere. It doesn't matter where it is.
Right.
Ohtani wouldn't come out of the bullpen. He might come out of the dugout because he's DHing.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I imagine he's never going to play the field again, you know, but he'd come out of the dugout. Or he'd probably just go from the dugout during, like, the eighth inning with your team having a lead, walking out to the bullpen.
Oh, yeah.
And people would go nuts.
Warm up a little bit.
Nuts. I would get a car. We're talking about trumpets.
Bring back the car. Yeah.
And you know, enter Sandman.
Bring back the car.
Bring the bullpen.
You'd have to for him.
Bring back the car for him.
He would deserve it.
Ohtani closing would be something
else. He'll be
able
to afford it.
Rigetti went from starter to closer. Smoltz went from starter to closer. I mean, it's happened.
Eckersley.
Smoltz is, you know, has had TJ surgery too.
Just bring in Tim Wakefield. Let's teach him how to throw a knuckle so he stays healthy. How about that?
How much more unfair?
Call your boy Nevin.
I'll call Phil.
844-204-RICH, number to dial. We'll take your phone calls and so much more. That's a great chat.
It's time for kickoff, and the Believe podcast will get you ready for the new season.
How do you live through this as a Detroit sports fan?
Believe has podcasts covering all 32 professional teams and many of your favorite college teams, too.
You solidified your defense. You got better.
Sideline to sideline, end zone to end zone.
If you don't do those things, then you're not even trying your hardest to win at football, and I don't know what we're doing.
There was a lot of great players on those teams that I was fortunate to be part of.
Search BLEAV podcasts wherever you listen.
We had Jerry on the show just a couple of weeks ago, Larry, and I asked him, how come Steinbrenner himself never appeared on Seinfeld? And he said Steinbrenner shot a scene, but it was so bad you cut it. Is that a true story?
True story, yeah.
What was so bad about it?
He flew out on his private jet to do the show and flew back that day. And okay, he did it. And then I go into editing and I'm watching the show. And oh my God, he was so awful. He was so bad. It was, you couldn't use it. It was much better from behind with my voice, you know, than actually seeing the real guy doing it.
Right. So that was a scene where he was with Costanza?
He was with Elaine in a restaurant, I think.
Okay.
And I had to call him up and tell him he was cut.
How did that go?
I called Yankee Stadium. I said, I want to talk to Mr. Steinbrenner. It's Larry David. He got on the phone. I said, Mr. Steinbrenner, it's Larry David calling from the Seinfeld show. Yes, Larry, what is it? I said, I'm sorry to tell you this. He said, come on, you can tell me. I'm a big boy. I can take it.
But you slipped right back in that voice.
Yeah, like right. I slipped right back in, right. And I said, I've been cut from the show. And I said, it's not your fault, but it's just the scene wasn't working, and that was it.
How do you take it?
He was a big boy. He took it well.
So he told you how he was going to take it,
and he actually took it, yeah.
George Steinbrenner and Elaine. Wow. I would never have guessed. I would have thought that there would have to have been a Costanza George moment.
I know there was an Elaine scene. I don't know. There may have been a George scene. I'm not sure. I don't remember.
All of Larry David's brilliant appearances in the history of our show are sitting on our YouTube feed, youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show. Back here on the program, Arthur in Tampa, Florida. Let's take your phone call. What's up, Arthur?
Hey, buddy. How we doing?
What's going on?
Well, my question is, you guys are living in the dream, if you will, in the West Coast as far as you know, the Pac-12 becoming the Pac-4, the AFC West. What do you think is the best story that's going to happen this year as far as the two of those?
Well, I mean, look, and the problem with and thank you for the call, Arthur. The problem with the Pac-12, and the reason why they're the Pac-4 right now and maybe down to the Pac-2 is because the national interest in what's going on the West Coast here doesn't matter how good Oregon is or Caleb Williams is the first overall pick in the draft next year if he's so chooses to come out. I'm saying he might not, which is kind of like, okay. But, I mean, there's some Lincoln Riley and Chip Kelly and UCLA. I mean, there are some stories out here. But folk, are they interested? Dion is part of the Pac-12 for their final season? I don't know. The AFC West, though, I mean, what's going to go on out here with the Raiders and the Chargers, I think of more interest, to say the least, and the Broncos, the Chiefs. So we picked that division yesterday as part of our daily division predictions, taking you all the way up to the opening week of the National Football League season. I would just go around the horn here. Brockman's not here. He did leave his predictions. And I would tell you, you know, what's your prediction, TJ? And I would ask you, Mike, to stop doing whatever banking you're doing on whatever phone you're
I'm
on.
I'm here. I'm paying attention.
But I would ask for NFL Films music. But
you want some? I'll give you a little.
I mean, the NFC West, I think we all predicted it the same. Is that correct? You want to put Brockman out real quick? Let's just whip through it. Chris went, I'm assuming, even though he thinks Kyle Shanahan is Fugazi, he still goes Niners. Yeah. And even though he thinks Gino going to do it again, he still went Seahawks and Rams Cardinals. You.
Guess what?
Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, as we're hot changing, all that's changing is the photograph.
Same thing for you.
Because it's the same thing for me, too.
Why didn't you ask me? I mean, wouldn't you like to know what my predictions
are? What's your prediction?
That's what this time is for now, to
I'm
ask
just saying,
you.
Like,
see, no,
what?
She's. I know
I'm,
she's going to say.
The, now I'm it's, the woman, now so you can't ask late. Me what my
now
predictions
it's too late.
Are?
What's your prediction?
Same thing.
Well, Susie, you were dropping Rich's kid off at school.
That's true. No, so, yeah, no. That's okay. She's,
I'm just the housewife
no,
over
she's
here,
not.
DJ.
What
no
the
one's
football
asking me about
Susie
my
Schuster
predictions?
And Amy Trask coming
yeah,
every Tuesday
right.
on the podcast.
Well, that's how we set this up, because now we have you live and we can ask you in front of the... See, we
every
just got a graphic.
Tuesday.
I'm just saying, just because I'm the woman sitting here, you
oh
can ask me about the
gosh.
Prediction.
Oh, my
Go
gosh.
Go to break.
The woman with the biggest Rolodex of anyone, the most well-known person on the set now, all of a sudden.
I mean, I'll talk about predictions.
Well, tomorrow, which one are we going to do tomorrow?
Also, like,
it's
the same.
South?
No, we're going to do AFC South tomorrow.
Yeah, South tomorrow.
AFC
Susie
South.
Asked me if
you
I
know
want...
why
okay.
I did that, DJ? Rich used to get so mad on NFL Network when they'd ask all the guys
oh,
all
yeah.
their predictions.
Oh, yeah.
Because
so
I was just a traffic cop.
Tell me about my predictions.
That's why I started doing this show.
I
this
know.
Show would existed if they asked exactly. me for the first 12 years of NFL
yeah,
Network, what do you think, Rich?
Yes.
They never asked
we
wouldn't
be in this beautiful studio.
And yet he just did the same thing to me.
I did not do the same thing
did.
To you.
Rich kind of just did.
AFC
oh,
South tomorrow.
Hot change. Where's my picture, Rich?
AFC South tomorrow.
Can't wait. Bringing it.
Susie, they asked me if I wanted to do it. Rich actually asked me. I'm like, I don't want to do it.
All we're doing, all we're doing is a podcast with you and Amy Trask every Tuesday called What the Football. There it is.
Yeah, there we go. There's my girl.
Song. We got to work on a theme song.
Yeah. That's the art.
Working
Look at that art.
You know what? It's funny. This art, both of you were like, do we really have to have both our faces on there? And I said, I'll meet you halfway.
Well, Amy said that we look like spies.
Yeah, you're coming. You're lurking.
Yeah,
you lurk.
We're lurking.
On What the Football every lurk. Tuesday.
WTF.
What the
yeah.
Football.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or What the Football.
There might be some ice cream.
Yes.
Oh just, yeah, what happened to the Sundays?
I'm going to do your show just for that reason.
One more yeah. scoop again, called the third hour of this show coming up next on the Rich Eisen Show.
For over three decades, nobody has had a wrestling career like Arn Anderson. Conrad Thompson gets all the stories with Arn.
After watching AEW's Double or Nothing, Amy wants to know, what does dinosaur taste like?
It ain't chicken. It's like biting into a sinewy charcoal briquette.
Ah.
But chewy.
Oh, like wow, that's disgusting.
Yeah, sure is.
Check out Arn every week, wherever you listen.